This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 20.
And when you slam down the hammer, can you see it in your heart?
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 20. Every week, the crew of iFanboy, which is myself, Josh, and Connor.
Hello.
And Ron.
I'm back.
Hee-hee! We read comics and then post up on the website about what we think the best one of the week was, and then we talk about it in this here podcast. And this week, with the return of Ron Richards, we have his pick, so take it away.
Thank you, Josh. It's good to be back. It's good to be back on the podcast. Anyway, so this week was actually a pretty average week in the number of books I bought. I bought about 10 comics, but it was above average in terms of the quality across those 10 comics.
It was a very good week.
Yeah, it was. Josh, do you concur or no?
I actually bought a lot of books for me, and I had
and they were good books for other people. Almost.
No, it's a relative term. You guys, when you buy a lot of books,
it's
a lot
of
when I don't, when I think I have a big week, it would be a small week for you. I don't buy as many comics as you guys.
Gotcha.
Because I'm without love.
Anyway,
money.
So like I said, I had a lot. You know, I picked about 10 books. Of those 10 books, a good 6 or 7 were in the running for the pick of the week this week. It was a hard pick for me. I bought a lot of the average Marvel fare and a lot of mutant books like Uncanny and X-Factor 4 and New Excalibur and Ultimates 2 issue 10 was out, and so there's a lot of Marvel team up, a lot of good stuff to consider. But I think I surprised some people with my pick of Infinite Crisis number 5.
That was a shocker.
My mother was just freaked out. She called me.
And she left a message on the machine.
Just left a long message.
Yeah. Anyway, but it was
a weird joke, wasn't it?
It was. Only 5 people will get that joke.
No, not that one. Layers upon layers.
I did it again. Anyway, Mel Gibson. So Infinite Crisis was an interesting pick for me because I'm not a DC guy. I enjoy DC from afar. Admittedly, I buy The Flash regularly and I buy JLA. And then I'll pick up, like, I picked up Teen Titans for a little bit. I picked up, that's really it.
He caught an episode of the Batman on TV one day.
I like to watch from afar, it's not something that I'll follow, but I kind of like to keep abreast. Every now and then I'll attack Connor over our instant messenger and say, okay, who's this person? What are they doing? What does this mean? And, so that said, I've been reading Infinite Crisis since the first issue, and I got no idea what's going on. I mean, I have a vague idea. There are multiple Earths and Alexander Luthor and Superboy, and there's an old Superman and a dead Lois, and stuff's happening, but that's it. I'm done.
But it was the best book you read.
It was the best book I read because not because of the you know, confusing plot and the layers of subtleties and characters and the ramifications for the greater DC universe. Rather, it was good for two reasons. One, we talk about you know, writing and the story so much because, you know, this decade, I guess that's what we're about now, about comics, about quality of the story and the writing, which is a good thing to be about. But for the first time in a while, the art really kind of jumped out at me. And I really, really enjoyed the combination of, you know, one of my favorites, Phil Jimenez, or however you want to pronounce it, and the kind of classical, almost like old school style of Jerry Ordway.
Which worked within the context of the story, which was half the story was on the Earth 2, which is the more 50s style Silver Age Earth, and then Earth, the regular Earth, which is the modern Earth. So that really worked story-wise.
Which is fascinating because I had no idea that Jerry Ordway's pages were on Earth 2. But it makes sense now, so I'll go with it.
Yes, that's what it was.
But that's just how confusing the story is. But
I don't know why I loved this, but I loved it.
I'm a DC guy, and I was confused because the opening, I felt like I'd missed an issue, something.
Yeah, yes, somewhere. You feel like there's things in between. They're at church, and they're it's I didn't know.
Part of it to do with the fact that these last few issues have been really delayed.
Yeah. Well.
That's the worst feeling in comics.
I hate
that you read 2 to 3 pages, and then you look at the number, and you go, do I remember the last issue? And then occasionally it'll make you go back to your little stack, and you'll be like, no, there's 54.
Well, the problem is, well, luckily Marvel's got those little recap pages, which honestly have been helpful, because there have been issues of Uncanny where I'm like, I must have missed an issue. Yeah. And I didn't miss an issue. And it sucks because the way I manage my collection, I can't, because I keep all my long boxes in storage. So once I file them away, it's a pain in the ass to go back and pull books out. So I can't go back. So it's like, I just got to roll with it. So
I love that Marvel feature. I think that's one of the most useful things
great.
Ever.
I mean, do you remember back in the 90s when they had like the gatefold cover and they explained the characters?
That was a really, really great thing.
It really expensive too, I think. But it was, but that was genius. And the recap thing is great. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so because, you know, these books are months at a time, and there's no way. And reading 10 books a week, you know, on average, you can't keep track of everything. You know,
plus like, TV, plus
plus work, you know,
the internet.
Yeah. Anyway, but so the art really jumped out at me, and the art was really, you know, kind of like I enjoyed it. But the thing that really pushed it over the edge, that extra push off the cliff for me, was the fact that this book kind of summed up a feeling that happens in comics every now and then, more often in the grand epic kind of stories. But it's what I like to call kind of like the rally moment. When it's, you know, typically at the end of Act 2, beginning of Act 3, when, you know, we've seen the conflict and the worst has happened and the heroes are at their worst and people are
dead. You mean
when
Jimmy Fallon finally decides to marry Drew Barrymore?
I didn't see that movie.
Awful.
Anyway,
I'm sorry.
Not one of your better ones.
Oh, wait a minute. Was that the Red Sox movie? Yeah, I did see that movie. Wow, I forgot I saw it. That's not good at all. But anyway, yeah, she ran across the field. Yeah,
oh, stop.
Anyway, please. Did you know there's of the multiple Earths, there's one that's the shape of a square, like a cube?
Isn't that the Bizarro?
That is Bizarro.
Yeah, that's neat. Anyway.
Look at me pulling that one out.
So back to the rally moment. It's the moment when, you know, the heroes are at their worst, and then it takes one or two or a group of them to kind of pick themselves back up and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, and let's go do it, and that kind of charge, and it's that energy that literally jumps off the page and had me like reading every page, going, yeah, yeah, and like getting very 11-year-oldy with the comic again, and a couple, you know, I've always enjoyed that moment, like back in, you know, now almost 15 years ago, if you guys remember the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries from Marvel.
That's one of the best miniseries of all time.
I actually have that too.
Jim Starlin.
It would have been even better if George Perez had been able to finish it.
That's true.
Himself.
But there's that one moment, and I know it's the beginning of the rally moment, but that one moment when Captain America stands up to Thanos, and you know, even though he does die, but Thanos thinks he's conquered the heroes, and is this all you have to offer? And Captain America stands up, and he says, "But you're a human, and it doesn't matter because you're bad, and we're good, and we'll always prevail, and there'll always be another. There'll be someone right behind me standing up to you." And it's just that, yeah. And there have been
you need me on that wall. Wait, that's different. Sorry.
There have been countless moments in the X-Men books that I've read through the years. Like I remember in the Extinction Agenda crossover, the moment when they became free and got their powers back and turned the tide. And there's always some Cyclops standing, you know, legs, you know, like maybe like 2 feet apart, pointing at someone, and like all the X-Men behind him going, yeah, you know, like, and you know that, like, you know, like, don't fuck with the X-Men, you know.
So and they forget at that,
because it would be too much fun.
They forget at that moment what a huge and utter tool Cyclops is.
Hey, come on. Show some respect, all right? He's the leader. It's a lot of responsibility.
I guess. Poor me. Zap, zap.
So Infinite Crisis, no idea what's going on. I guess it means a lot to DC, but I'm ready for the next issue. Bring it on. And in 3 months, I'm sure I'll be enjoying it.
Well, this
Woo!
There's a lot of really great moments in this book. It was really, really good. I liked it a lot. I liked the homage to the classic Superman image of him throwing, you know, crushing somebody with a car in the Earth 2 when the Supermans are fighting.
The Action Comics homage.
Right. I liked the fact that this is all turning out to be a Lex Luthor plot, even if it is Lex Luthor of Earth 2.
It is?
Yeah, if you notice, he tricked everybody. He tricked Superman and Superboy into helping him. He knew Lois would die. You didn't pick that up?
Oh, that fact is about 6 feet above my head with the rest of the facts of this story that I just completely missed.
Didn't you hear him? He liked the Jerry Wardway art. He liked the rally moment.
And then I like when That's Nightwing enough. Said, let's go! So, yeah.
But, I like the fact that it might come down to Nightwing and Superboy saving everybody. Although there are 2 issues left, so who knows. I liked a lot of little things. Lex Luthor from Earth 1 finally taking ownership of his son, Superboy.
Ownership?
Yeah, like, he never really, you know, right, said, no, I'm, you know, just... you're my son, I'm your father.
Sounds like prison, I'm not reading it.
And it was just a lot of little moments that were good in an overall good story.
Cool. But!
But, there are problems.
But?
Problems beyond the fact that I just ripped one of the pages.
I ripped the page out too just now.
The what middle page?
Yeah!
Came off the staple?
Yeah, the one with, yeah. when Batman's meeting the heroes on the right side?
Yes.
Yeah, that exact page just ripped out of my book as well. And now I need to go buy another one.
Literally just happened.
Yeah. You better not.
No, I won't.
Here's the problem. This was my understanding of this whole event is that Infinite Crisis was this miniseries leading into the new status quo of the DC Universe, which would be starting in one year later storylines.
In 2007.
In 2007. And simultaneous to that would be the 52 miniseries coming out weekly, which would explain the year gap between Infinite Crisis and the other books. That was my understanding. These Infinite Crisis books have been late for various rumored reasons. Some of them are, some of them writing. It depends on who you believe. There's 2 issues left of Infinite Crisis, assuming they don't add one like they did to Olmec. All of a sudden it was a 7, it was an 8-issue miniseries. But the one year later book...
Sometimes
started,
baby needs bigger pants.
It's true. But the 1 year later book started this week, so now we've got everything's jumped ahead. It throws off the whole flow of the story because now things might be revealed in these 1 year later books, which haven't happened yet. Infinite Crisis, it might dilute, you know, moments in the miniseries, and that just annoys me from an organizational standpoint.
But you still bought some of the 1 year laters?
Sure, I mean you have to because they're the regular books, but. Obviously, there's some cataclysmic event that ends the Infinite Crisis miniseries, which changes the whole...
Or so you assume.
Well, you assume, and that's what they've been saying, and if you read the books, it's changed the whole feel of the universe, and, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. These books were really good, and I like the fact that it's bringing a big mystery back to... To DCU, like what the whole thing will be, what happened, but... Anyway.
I think I didn't realize that they had started because... They were just regular numbered. I think I thought they were going to renumber them or something like that.
Well, so. Some of the books are being rebooted, but for the most part, it's just a continuing numbered.
Ah,
so I picked up...
So confusing.
I picked up 3 of the 5 one-year later books. The best being Detective Comics 817, which I think, Josh, you would like. It's written by James Robinson, who hates comic fans but writes good comics.
He hates
it's
us.
True. Because he directed and wrote the movie Comic Book Villains, which really made fun of comic book fans. But at the same time, like if you see him, he's like he looks like an actor, and he's got tattoos, and he's English, and he's really
he's
cool.
He's so cool, yeah. He looks
prick.
All right.
Detective Comics was so good that I read it, and during the middle of reading, I thrust a fist into the air.
Start banging on your podium?
I did. We are warriors!
You need me on that wall! Sorry. Colonel Jessup shows up sometimes.
It was really good. Not the least of which is because Gordon is back as being the commissioner.
Isn't he like 100 now?
No, they don't age in comics.
I know. He was pretty old when he left.
He didn't leave. Well, let's not get into that. But the whole he's been a missing element to the book for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And
but it's a great storyline when he went away.
And Bullock is back in the Force, and we don't know why. Something major happened, and Gotham hasn't seen Batman in a year. So that's another why. This is the first time Batman's been back in a year. So,
Connor, you're through the Looking Glass.
I am, and it's good. It's really, really good. I was really excited by it.
So, who was the artist on the on
Leonard
the
Kirk?
I don't know who that is.
He's
Kirk.
And Batman is back with Robin. Robin's got his new costume, and it's just, it's good old Batman books, which we haven't seen in a while.
You're excited.
I was actually really, really excited. We haven't seen it since really since Brubaker and Rucka left the books. Mm-hmm. The KG Beast was killed, and Gordon's back as commissioner, and Batman and Robin are back together, and the Signal's back, and something happened. There's like a timeline in the book. Batman hasn't been seen in 12 months. It's been 3 months since Gordon's been commissioner. Bullock's been back on the Force since for 9 months. You know, like they're setting up for, like, you're going to look forward to in the 52 miniseries these events happening.
That's kind of cool.
It is cool.
That makes me want to read 52.
It makes my head hurt.
What else you got? What you sell me on some 1 year later? Because I'm interested. I really I would like to get into some of these books again because I stopped because I wasn't interested.
Well, it's a Detective Comics, definitely. Aquaman, I really liked it. I feel, loath to recommend Aquaman.
Why?
He's an easy target. You guys make fun of my like.
Hey,
Aquaman.
I like Aquaman. I have no problem with Aquaman.
I don't care about Aquaman. I don't hear Aquaman and go, oh, that's stupid. Well, anything.
That's a point of view in of itself, then. Indifference.
Well, this sure. Aquaman is written by Kurt Busiek. This one's a conundrum. This one's going to be an interesting book if it's done well.
Does he have his hand?
Well, here's the thing. This isn't Aquaman. This is a new Aquaman.
Huh? But this book's called Aquaman.
It's called Aquaman. The guy looks like Aquaman. His name is Arthur Curry.
Does he have the beard?
Hey, man, I don't know. I might not be too smart, but my mom told me that if it looks like Aquaman and if it sounds like Aquaman, that it's probably Aquaman.
Oh, he did it.
Well, it's not, and it's revealed in the last page. Where
that makes no sense.
I can't. Basically, the other Aquaman also was missing. Very confusing. I know this.
I really. When this is all done, I hope you go back and listen to the podcast and hear the pain in your voice as you try to explain this to us.
Well, a lot of the pain in my voice is because I'm sick and my voice hurts.
Excuses.
Can I ask you one question?
Sure.
Is he grizzled?
No, he hasn't been grizzled.
He looks like a pretty boy in the cover.
He hasn't been grizzled in over a year.
Yeah, he's been pretty boy.
Listen, the only time I've ever been interested in Aquaman was when he was grizzled. And if he's not grizzled, if he's not bearded and surly, meh.
Well, Aquaman's always surly. It's just the bearded part.
Okay,
that's
grizzled.
Is this new Aquaman surly?
Well, this new Aquaman's very confused because he...
So he's not surly yet.
This mysterious guy from the deep...
Oh, God. I have one question, too, about Aquaman.
Yes,
On the cover, he's holding a sword, which is interesting. Because it's called Sword of Atlantis. That
and it's
sense.
Sort of a...
I bet that's it.
And then there's a guy behind him that looks like a shark man. Is this the same shark man from the Green Lantern series that we recently read?
No.
So there are multiple shark men running around the DC universe. That's your problem right there with the DC universe.
Multiple shark men?
Shark men.
Well, look, lots of things in the deep that we don't know about.
Who's the shark man?
He's King of the Sharks.
Arr! King of the Sharks!
I'm out. I'm not buying it.
Aquaman's got a sword.
You seriously want me to read a book where there's a guy who's like, oh yeah, I'm king of the sharks.
Someone's got to be king of the sharks.
No, the sharks can be a republic with one man, one vote, and why does it have to be a monarchy?
Maybe that'll be an issue later on.
Yeah, maybe.
But if it's a corporation, he's the CEO of the sharks.
Yeah.
But then there's this guy who's got like a squid head. And
is he king of the squids?
No, but he's the other guy in the cover, and...
I thought that was the Ragman.
No.
Is that the guy from Jabba's Palace?
It looks like it, but at the end, in the last page, it's very much hinted that this is the actual Aquaman.
But it's not.
Well, I think it is.
I'm so confused.
Yes, but that's
part of
the mystery.
Is this an amnesia storyline?
Wait, is the real Aquaman the Shark Man?
Maybe.
Now I'm
maybe
just
maybe that's Aqualad.
Aqualad. But he's a wuss, isn't he?
Yeah. He's kind of a wuss.
All right, I'm 1 year later out.
Well, there's one more book I bought, which I don't have to really mention, which was Outsiders. And it is virtually the same as the previous.
Are you sure
Outsiders
it was the 1 year later Outsiders book? If it was the same,
it's got the stamp on it. Right. The only difference is that
it's a year later, but nothing changed.
Nightwing is the leader again. He was on the team for a while.
But I thought Nightwing isn't Nightwing 1 year later.
Well, that's the rumor. We'll find out when the Nightwing book hits.
I'm so confused.
Well, that's part of the fun is figuring out all these things.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, admittedly, a lot of my brain is tied up with who is Scott Summers' child. So. It's hard to keep track of all those X-Men relationships.
Or the third
hours of the day.
Yeah, actually, I sit there with pads just trying to sketch out the relations and figure out.
Did they ever say who the third Summers brother was?
Don't even get me started on that, by the way. Don't even get me started on that. You know why? Because the same fucking thing happened to me recently. Okay, this is a bit of a
you
tangent.
You have a mysterious third mutant brother?
This is a bit of a tangent, but actually, I mean, this is an early segue to our listener mail, but we did receive an email from Jim Snow, who liked the podcast, and he reminded me, and I feel stupid that I didn't remember, that the title of X-Men Deadly Genesis is a reference to the title of the story in Giant Size X-Men number 1, which had the same title of Deadly Genesis. That's how the new team been, And he also agrees that it's a horrible title, but if anybody's to blame, it's Len Wein and not Brubaker. But
well, it's less horrible now that it's a homage.
Yeah, but the reason why I'm bringing this up is because in that book we found out that when for those of you who don't know X-Men history is that the original X-Men team went to go find a new mutant who turned out to be Krakoa, the Living Island, and he captured them, and so Professor Xavier had to recruit a new team, and he recruited Nightcrawler and Wolverine and Storm and Colossus and Thunderbird and that team, right. Banshee and Sunfire, and they went to go rescue them. Okay, what we didn't know was that Maura Metaggart was training a team of her own, and Xavier quickly trained them and sent them to go rescue them, and they failed. So Brubaker's book is telling the story of that failed team, mm-hmm. and on that team there is somebody named Vulcan who apparently, and spoiler alert, stop listening or skip ahead a minute.
20 years?
I stopped listening a long time ago.
Apparently he is the third Summer brother.
Oh, really?
But did I find that out in X-Men Deadly Genesis? No, I found that out in a 2-page spread in Wizard. Because the issue that we find out that he's the third Summer brother hasn't come out yet.
Well, that'll
be
stop.
Hold on. Here it is. You're going to hear any sympathy from us.
None. I don't expect None. Any sympathy. I'm punching myself. I threw the magazine. I was like, God. And they did write, spoiler alert, don't read if you want to know who the third Summer Brothers is.
Well, in tiny little letters above
the big
letters.
Yeah, well, there's like a 2-page picture of the character, and I'm like, oh, God damn it. So, whatever. It's my own fault, I know.
Is this going to make you stop reading Wizard?
No.
Nothing will. Officially nothing will.
I don't know why. You know why? Because I really like those 3 pages where they show the new toys that are coming out.
Then buy Toy Fair.
Yeah, whatever.
All right, so let me just quickly mention something else from this week's books before we go off on a complete tangent.
Yeah. And I apologize about that.
That's okay. That's interesting because...
It was.
Yeah.
No, I do find it interesting because I've always wondered who the third Summers Brothers were.
Well, there you go. His name is Vulcan, and he's a very powerful mutant, apparently.
Does he have 20 ears?
No, he doesn't. He's Vulcan.
Does he have two eyelids?
I forget what his exact powers are. It's something with energy, and I don't know.
I thought it had something to do with rubber.
Very logical.
Anyway, go on.
Batman Annual 25 came out, which is odd in and of itself because they don't really do annuals anymore.
I love annuals, by the way.
Yeah. I did too, until they got stupid.
When they were all tied in together, they were great.
The whole point of this annual was to explain how Jason Todd came back to life, and it involves...
Oh, because we all were dying to know.
Well, I mean...
25 years I've been waiting for this answer.
It involves Infinite Crisis and some energy wave from when Superboy broke through the reality barrier, and it involves Lazarus Pit and...
I love the plot devices. It's like, well, if we use the Lazarus Pit and an energy barrier, then we can bring back Jason Todd. It's like,
wait. What about the Speed Force? What
about Hyper Time?
And
that's gone, isn't it?
I hope so.
That's been retconned.
But the notable thing with the miniseries, because otherwise it was mostly unnotable, is that originally when Jason Todd was killed back in the 80s and we had that phone vote, we could vote he lives or dies, DC had to have 2 issues ready, one if he lives, one if he dies, because, lead time and all that stuff. the issue where he lives went right in the drawer.
It was back in olden days, too, right?
Yeah, back in the...
Before computers.
Before the internet.
Before the dark times.
And hand color them.
They had to...
Before the empire.
They put that issue in a drawer and never saw the light of day. They basically saw maybe a panel here or there and stories about it, but you never saw anything from it. This, since time sort of gets altered, Superboy escapes, they flash back to him actually living and surviving the attack from the Joker, and they showed the original art from that issue where he lived that never came out before.
The legendary Jim Aparo.
Right. So that was interesting. And that was, oh, that's cool. I mean, that's a good way to do it. At first I thought, wow, that's a really good copy of his style. Then I looked at it and I went, wait, that's him. That's actually Jim Aparo. So.
Good.
That was good.
That's really cool. I think that may have been the first thing I ever bought. In comics, was the trade of the Death in the Family.
Ooh, let's play that game. What's your first comic book? Go. Josh?
Death in the Family trade.
Okay, Connor?
I don't know. It was like when I was...
What's the earliest comic book you remember reading?
G.I. Joe.
Wow, interesting. Interesting. Mine is...
G.I. Joe or Batman. I mean, I remember those two, but
G.I.
Joe...
Well, my earliest comic book, like actual as a physical comic book, is also G.I. Joe. I remember... I still have it at my parents' house, I think. It's the... And I remember when they re-released them in trades, I got it just to get that issue again. But it's the one with the flashback to Vietnam with Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow.
26-27.
Yeah, with the arrow on the cover and like the picture. Yeah. But
we were consumed. I remember kindergarten. We were consumed with the mystery of Snake Eyes' identity.
I read all of those probably 3 or 4 years ago for the first time, and I was consumed with it.
Yeah.
They're really good. They're good comics.
Yeah, they are.
The first comic that I actually remember, I think we got when we were in Europe, and it's a French spy.
Ooh!
Stop. But
you know who goes to Europe?
Stop. Come on.
Connor, who goes to Europe?
Rich people.
Rich people!
Right. Or my dad on business, but anyway. And
you don't do business in Europe if you're not rich people.
And it was a Spider-Man comic, and it had... Spider-Man chasing the dude on the skateboard, Rocket Racer or whatever his name is, or whatever.
Oh, Web of Spider-Man.
It wasn't like an actual issue. It was like an anthology, but it was all in French.
Oh.
So like I didn't know what the hell it said, but I just remember looking at every page and like trying to figure out the story and all. And I remember that the guy in the red and orange outfit on the skateboard and you know this afro and it was just like yeah. So anyway, because it was like 1980. But
someday we should do something on G.I. Joe because that. Probably so.
Yeah.
One comic that's responsible for more people reading comics than any other comic.
Which is funny because it's so not like superhero-y. It's
no, like, and it's funny because
which is good.
Yeah.
But
it
was true.
It used the comic book medium really really well, and it has nothing to do with superheroes, but it's still that same like ongoing soap opera.
I was so hooked.
I mean, there's an argument can be made that they are superheroes. They have code names. They wear the same clothes.
The costumes and all. Yeah.
But it was the use of the cartoon and the comics together at the same time. Back when they could. Never mind. Let's do this another time.
Here's a quick question for you guys: is it at all surprising to you that my favorite X-Men is Cyclops and my favorite G.I. Joe character was Flint?
No.
Yeah, I think that.
I would have thought Duke is more.
No, I don't like Duke. Duke was too Aryan for me. I like Flint. Flint was the everyman. I related to Flint.
And you thought Lady J was hot. And...
Oh, I loved Lady J.
You were
That's weird. That's weird. Okay, so back to 2006.
So that was the most notable thing was that other than those other books.
Yeah.
Was that annual and the fact that Jonah Hex had really really bad art for the first time.
Cowboy.
And it almost Josh,
there was a Jonah Hex book.
Yes, you missed it.
Did you miss it?
Oh, I must have.
Do you just stumble around drunk?
Like, seriously, like, we've been doing this since we were kids. Like, I want to go with you to your comic book store and watch you shop through your books.
It's sold out. It's not my fault. I just go in there and I look.
But you didn't even know if it was going to be out. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I forgot to look. It was a very busy week.
There's a great website called ifanboy.com. And,
oh, go to hell.
And they post all the comics that come out every week, and you can go read it, and then you can write down the books you want to get, and then you can go get them.
You know, it was a busy week. It was my birthday this week.
Happy birthday.
And then my computer died. I had to buy a new... Don't patronize me.
You're
a yeah, so anyway, G.I. Joe. it was a busy week, okay? A lot of stuff going on at work.
Didn't have it. There was another book that came out, which I don't think either of you guys got, that I did, that I actually did enjoy, despite my lackluster opinion of it on the site and in the conversations on the site, was Ms. Marvel #1 from Marvel, which was the kind of launching of her solo book after her kind of, you know, she comes out of House of M realizing she's not being the hero that she could be, and so she decides to dedicate herself to the hero's life. And it was good.
Because she has a blog now?
No, the blog wasn't in this, actually. But yeah,
That was lame.
It was kind of lame. But
they'd get mad at her for that? Be like, listen,
don't blog about our life.
Come on.
But it was good. It was, I mean, like, and I apologize for sounding underwhelmed about it. But it was the first issue. But like, the art was good. The story was good. And I think this book has a lot of promise.
Who's the writer again?
The writer is Reed.
I know I asked this question on the website, but I don't remember.
Hang on, let me get to the credit page.
I looked at it and I thought it was the new Spider-Woman for a second.
No.
The Bendis and
you were wrong. It was written.
So
by,
I didn't buy it.
Written by Brian Reed and drawn by Roberto Della Torre. But it was good. I mean, it was.
What is the concept of this series?
The concept is Ms. Marvel, Carol Danvers, has realized that she's got great, that she has powers, and she could be a great hero like she was in House of M, and that she hasn't been living up to her potential. So she's trying to be, you know, like she. So she goes out on patrol. And she, you know, like, she's not, you know, not joining the Avengers. She's doing the solo thing, and she's, you know.
Does she have a squad car?
No. And one of the things, like, when she's on patrol, like, this laser beam flies by, and she calls Captain America, and then she's like, I'm not calling Captain America. I can just go chase it. You know, like, it's interesting to see how a superhero without the self-confidence that Captain America might have struggles with being a superhero and try to be a better hero. So it's a good premise. So
by the way, that sounds to me like a really easy thing for a, let's say, aspiring writer to probably get put together.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, it's a complete and total analogy to the life of a writer. Like, well, I really am better than this. I could be doing a lot more with it.
Yeah, and like case in point, in the beginning of the book, she tussles with Stiltman, who is one of those classic old Iron Man characters, villains, and she takes him down, and he has no idea who she is. And so she's like, geez, even Stiltman doesn't know who I am, you know, so...
Well, that's a little goofy, because she's been an Avenger for, like, 20
years.
Well,
yeah, but the thing is that she was Ms. Marvel, and then she was Binary, and then she was Warbird, and now she's
that's
back
true.
To being Ms. Marvel, and she would change costumes, and she was never really... And that, they talk about that. She meets with a publicist, a PR person, and she calls her out on that. And she's like, you know, yes, you've been doing the hero thing, but, you know, like, the only thing people know about you is the tell-all book you wrote a couple of years ago, and, like, you know, so...
Ball 4?
No, not Ball 4. But it was a good book. But it's interesting, though, because the cover was drawn by Frank Cho.
We got some good listener mail on that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Actually, Steve wrote us. And I try to read everyone's email, but you know everybody loves the podcast and listens to it regularly. So thank you, Steve. His question isn't specifically about Ms. Marvel, but more about Frank Cho. Because I guess we referred to him in his work in Avengers as being pretty great art. And he wants to know if we really think he's a great artist.
Well, why don't you read what he said, and
he says,
we can
one
respond.
Question. Frank Cho is a great artist? Really? Even if all you want in a female character is big boobs? You have to admit that this stuff is just the same stuff every time. Brandy from Liberty Meadows is Mary Jane in Marvel Knight Spider-Man. Carol Danvers, Ms. Marvel, or Spider-Woman. It's all the same chick. Same face, same straight on boob to the right, crooked boob to the left, same muscular legs. The dude is just a one-trick pony. On a positive note, you were right. Daredevil 82 was awesome. But he says, keep up the great stuff, but get real about Cho.
One for two.
Which
I believe he called Cho a hack at the end, didn't he?
Yes, he did, actually. I scrolled down. He says, P.S., I'm from Beltsville and shop at the same comic shop as Cho. He seems like a nice guy, but he is a hack. So if he shops at the same place and sees him, like, you go up to him and be like, dude, you're a hack.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on it, you know? Like,
maybe Cho is listening. Are you listening, Cho?
If you are, Steve shops at your store and doesn't like you.
Kick his ass.
Yeah.
I think that Cho is, I think he's a really good artist. And I think if you were to take out the big titty girls from everything, I'd still go, that's a nice looking comic book.
He does have a good look, to a unique look to his work.
It's very smooth and clean.
Clean,
and,
very clean,
and,
yeah.
And the thing is, it's easy to call out the boobs. It's easy to go to the boobs,
mm-hmm.
You know.
But he draws in a slightly hyper-realistic style, and I think I recognize and agree somewhat with what he's saying about it being the same archetype of woman that he draws over and over again, but he probably does it the same thing with men. It's a hyper-realistic style. And the other thing is that that's something that he does really well. I mean, if you don't want that, that's fine, but he draws big, voluptuous women.
Well, put him against, like, Jim Valent.
Who?
Or Terry Dodson.
Right.
Oh.
And then you get, I mean, he's clearly much better than the other two.
Yeah, he does bring that to the table, and if that annoys you, I can see how it would get to you. But there is a lot of other stuff going on. He draws a really good comic book. Those couple of issues of Avengers that he did were just, they were really nice looking books, you know, with boobs.
Yeah. So Steve, we respect your opinion, but we respectfully disagree. So, and we would love to hear what happens when you confront Frank Cho in the store.
But I mean, just like that's his thing. That's why he gets hired.
True.
He started off doing Liberty Meadows, and everyone read that because of Brandy. And that's his thing. That's his, you know, like Frank Miller has giant feet. I don't think that's what he does. I don't think that's what it started out, but that's what
he's
got.
That's why he gets hired.
Yeah. I know.
He doesn't actually have giant feet. He draws giant feet. He actually has normal.
That's what I meant.
I know. So, so moving on, we have one more. It was a big week for listener mail.
And we have two. That's
three. We had three. And this one comes from our good friend Jason, who wrote in. He wrote in previously. He was the guy who the comics of the crack and that whole story.
I guess you'll have to go to the catalog for that description.
Yeah, go back. Yeah. He just read X-Men Mythos number one, which is kind of a redo of the original X-Men number one, and he thought it was very cool, and the art looked kind of like paintings, and it reminded him, you know, kind of a nostalgia trip. And I did read Mythos number one, and I thought it was okay, but I thought it was better when Joe Casey did it with Stephen Rude as Children of the Atom number one. But so that, and then he also read the Avengers Disassembled trade a few months back, and then the first volume of New Avengers, and he liked them so much that he subscribed to New Avengers. In the most recent issue, with the one page, not even put up a fight, Death of Alpha Flight. Nothing much happened. He was a little disappointed. It was like the first 5-minute intro of a TV show that broke for commercial, except the commercial is gonna last for a month now. So
it just went by quick.
Yeah, I think he was upset that a team that's been around as long as Alpha Flight, like 30 years, he says they deserve at least a full issue, at least a good fight for them.
Yeah, but they're lame.
I think that's the point of that. I think it's Bendis's joke.
Yeah, I mean, and technically Alpha Flight is like a X-Men fam, like they're part of the X-Men family. And
no.
I was a little upset to see them dealt with so
they're
quickly.
Lame.
But I don't think. But the thing is that they've killed off Alpha Flight so many times because Connor.
They're lame.
And they always come back. So I don't think they're dead.
I will say that when I was at the Comic Con in New York a few weeks ago, the disaster which Josh and I talked about in the podcast, which is currently trapped in his computer. the one panel I did attend was the X-Men Civil War panel. They talked about Alpha Flight, and taken at their word, Alpha Flight is really dead.
Well, we'll see.
And there will be a new Alpha Flight team coming out of Civil War, but
and then no one will read that book, and they'll kill them.
Right.
Anyway.
And then this one will come back. And once again, as I made the point, I don't remember, this is one of the podcasts that went out, there was more of an uproar about Northstar being gay than Northstar being dead.
True. Good point.
I mean, this is ridiculous. But you can just hear the, like, Bendis pitching the story. I can hear it in my head, like, talking to the editors and just saying, and then Alpha Flight gets killed in the page. Isn't that funny? We kill them because they're Canadian and lame.
Well, they're not lame because they're Canadian. They're just lame because they're lame.
No, but you know that's the joke behind it. That's the little joke.
Anyway.
I'm not
bad-mouthing Canada. That's not the point.
No, I know,
the
I know.
The easy
I know.
Joke is that they could be like, haha, the Canadian Avengers suck.
So Jason also has been enjoying Walking Dead and Invincible, and he thanks us for the Invincible record.
I have no problem with Canada.
As we continue to pimp Kirk.
Is this still on?
He picked up the trades for them and likes them both. And then finally, the last two things, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring out, you know, read his entire email. His son, who's 7, who was curious about comics through video games, is now obsessed with comics as well.
Well, that's good.
So it's pretty cool. So the two of them have been going to they go to two local comic shops, and the kid was beside himself, and they enjoy the podcast. So that's great.
Oh, the son listens. Ooh.
Well, he says I am enjoying your podcast. Okay. I assume the son listens. I don't know. Jason, does your son listen to the podcast? Let us know.
Hopefully not, because we do
finally
drop a curse every now and then.
He says, we tempted him to start reading Daredevil, and then he says the last full issues he read of Daredevil were Daredevil 180 and 182, which he bought off the rack in a 7-Eleven when he was 12.
Yikes.
And for those of you who don't remember, 180 through 182 was the Bullseye killing Elektra books.
Right. Ooh, that's a bit heavy.
which I thought was interesting because and he sent a a JPEG of the cover of and it's that one cover with the big Daredevil and then Bullseye and Elektra fighting. It says Bullseye versus Elektra, one wins, one dies.
Right.
A couple of years ago, I bought that issue as a back issue for like my like nice like my collection of nice back issues that I'm gonna frame and put on walls and that kind of thing. So I didn't buy it when I was 12 at 7-Eleven, but I did get it recently and. That's just a classic. If you have never read those issues, you should go back and find the Frank Miller Visionary Daredevil trade paperback and read them. Because
the first volume, not as necessary. Like there's three volumes of the Frank Marvel Visionary Daredevil. I have them all. The first one, he's drawing. He's not writing them all,
right.
And he's getting his legs under him.
It's early stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean it's really nice looking, but
it's the learning curve, Frank Miller.
Yeah, I mean if you're interested in really like the beginnings of a style, you can see it there, but they're not great Craig comics. Not the first volume. The second volume, you start to see that seed of genius, I guess.
The seed of genius insanity.
Well,
seed of genius that had an end, apparently.
Oh,
well,
stop.
Speaking of ends.
How can people write us fan mail or listener mail, Ron?
Yes, if you want to write us and let us know what you think of our opinions or what you think of comics or whatnot or what you think of Frank Cho, you can write us at contact@ifanboy.com.
Or if anybody...
if you are Frank Cho.
You can write us at contact.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
If you are a comic book professional and you listen to the podcast, drop us a line. Let us know. Also, if
you placate our own sorry egos.
The majority of our listeners are subscribed to us through iTunes, which is no surprise as iTunes is slowly taking over the world. And if you notice that if you go to our little page in iTunes, a couple of people have left some very nice words about us. If you like the podcast, why don't you throw up some words about us? You know, let us know what you think. Let the rest of share the iFanboy love with the rest of the world. So,
that would be cool. That's a nice idea. Fun.
Something else people can do is they can go to the Frapper map, which at this point, long-time listeners cut their throats because they're tired of hearing about it. But
ooh, can I spell the website?
Go ahead.
Do it.
frapper.com/ifanboy.
We are currently at 69 pins. We've been at 69 for a couple days now, and every day I check for that 70th pin, and there is not a 70th pin.
Listen, people, this is the slow push to 100.
Yes.
Okay? 100 people on our Frapper map legitimatize us.
That's true.
We then have voting power in the greater podcast community.
We get a seat in the
Parliament.
We get a seat in the Senate.
Yes. So please, you know, we know there are more than 69 people who download the podcast. I know this for a fact. So
some recent additions to the map are Charlie in Montreal, Quebec, another Canadian pin.
I have nothing against you, Charlie.
Or Alpha, or your superhero team.
Glenn from Aubrey, Texas, and Ian from Ventura, California, another Texas and California pin. Lowell, Massachusetts, Tippamagoo.
And don't forget Doug in my hometown in Norwalk, Connecticut.
We talked about Doug last podcast that's trapped in the phantom zone of Josh's hard drive.
Okay, so that'll come out.
You'll hear it.
Yeah, you and Doug should hang out.
Hey, Doug, I might have seen you at Stu's. You might have seen me at Stu's. Anyway, luckily, I cleverly have a picture on the Frapper map that hides what I really look like. So it makes
yeah, but if you were to come at him feet first.
Exactly. Or if he sees me wearing my Dark Hawk Rules t-shirt, then he can...
Here's the weird thing about the Frapper map. They've added a new feature that scrolls the picture along the bottom, everybody's
I don't like
pictures.
It so much.
I like that.
They stop when it gets to the three of us, and that's really strange, don't you think?
Well, it stops at one.
What do you mean?
It goes backwards.
I don't know.
It stops at Casey, who's the first picture after me.
Okay.
And don't you think that's odd? That's odd.
I think you're odd.
I'm a little odd.
I have no idea who Darkhawk is.
All right, that's a whole other podcast.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, you keep mentioning... I have no idea. I don't know what he looks like. I don't know where he comes from. I don't know what universe he's in.
You and me are going to sit down, and I'm going to school you a little bit in Darkhawk.
He loves Darkhawk.
Darkhawk rules! And in Marvel Team-Up, which came out this week, Darkhawk kicked ass. He was great.
He definitely will.
Anyway, so that's another podcast. So
how many comics of Darkhawk number one do you have?
25.
Still?
Good night, everybody.
He foresaw a revolution and it did not happen.
After all this time, you still got all 25?
Yeah, they're in my closet, my parents.
Yeah, but they're not anymore.
No, they are. They're there. I know exactly where they are and what shelf they're on.
He checks every time.
Yes, I do, actually.
When he goes back, he spends a half an hour in the closet.
The guy at the drugstore that I bought them from was like thought I was crazy. It was like 1989 or 1990.
He's not the only one.
And I bought all 25 copies they had on the rack.
He was right.
You deprived other people from loving Doc Ock like you do.
They were, hey,
that's true.
That's back when those books were a buck a piece.
I know. I got Dark Hawk number one.
Maybe we'll start giving. I fanboy giveaway. Should we start giving away copies of Dark Hawk number one? Okay, stay tuned, folks, for the future iFanboy giveaway when we figure out how we do that. Because, you know, you all want Dark Hawk number
one. We can have a contest, and then that'll be the prize.
Yeah, something. We'll figure it out. Next podcast, we'll figure it out. So, because as of right now, Dark Hawk number one is on eBay for. Here we go.
It's actually there.
Dark Hawk number one, near mint beauty, starting price 47 cents. You can buy it now for $3.95. No, you can buy it now for $1.97. Shipping $3.95.
What if it's slabbed?
I should totally get it slabbed.
47 cents.
Oh,
times 25 is $11.75.
Someone's got the entire lot of issues 1 through 34. The starting bid is 99 cents, and the shipping is $10. Listen, folks, when what you're buying, it costs more to ship than what you're buying, don't buy it. Anyway, but we'll be giving away for free, so tune in to a later podcast.
And shipping handling not included.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.